At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
You need reliable appliances to help you conquer the day. And Menards is the one-stop shop for huge savings on new energy-efficient appliances. We carry the largest in-stock selection, starting at low prices and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade today and save big money on new appliances right now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, episode number 44.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in voiceover. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there. My name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to know a little bit more about me, feel free to visit my website at www.andrewdmorrison.com. In this episode, we have an improv champion who has worked both on the mic and on screen for multiple national advertising campaigns. With his incredible knowledge of improvisational techniques, Scott Parkin is a true master in understanding the thought process behind a script, so that when he sees room for flavor, he can add a little bit of his special actor sauce. In this episode, we talk about improv techniques at home, going over the cliff of your comfort zone, and finding new ways to grow as an actor. So how do you take your coffee in the morning?
During the pandemic, we started looking for small things that were like little treats or things to look forward to. So I've always liked to mix a little bit of hot cocoa and then a big half gallon of Kahlua. No, I like a little carnation, French vanilla. I like really, really strong coffee, but with a couple additives.
So. Gotcha. Okay. So you're a flavor guy. I definitely.
I like cocoa and then a little bit of vanilla, and I do like Kahlua, but you know, you can't really do that every morning.
Gotcha. So how did you start? What is your origin story into the whole voiceover industry?
Radio. So I started radio when I was 21 out of Sac State. I started interning at KZAP in Sacramento, which was the big rock station. It came out of the progressive rock thing in the 70s when everything else was really poppy and stuff. And then these FM stations came in like, hey, it's a KSFM out of Woodland. That was side two, you know, that sort of vibe. And KZAP was sort of an extension of that. So I started interning, and then the morning guy got fired and made a tape of us and sent it out to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I was still in college. I still have 12 units of a communication degree to get. And I've always promised myself at some point I'd go back and get my money back for the other 239 units. So I left college at Sac State to go work in morning radio in Tulsa. I want to say 85, 86. I graduated high school in 80, bounced around colleges, work in Northern California, and then took the radio gig and did that and crisscrossed the country doing radio until I was asked to stop doing radio after I got back from covering the 92 Olympics in Albertville, France. And I'd already started doing voiceover. At the time, voiceover was making a big change from big time announcers to people that sounded more regular. And I didn't have a, you know, 19 testicles and a big announcer voice. I talked like this and I was good at it. And it was early in that, the conversational thing. So I was able to get some good work. And by the time I was asked to stop doing radio, I was already doing on-camera commercials, improv at the both improv improvisational group, 4 to 5 doctors, and a lot of corporate work and voiceover and on-camera commercials. So that was a, I was the program director. I was pissed off at him, and I didn't like being fired because I loved my job. I loved my radio gig. It was a blast. But he said, "I'm doing you the biggest favor. You'll thank me later because this thing is holding you back." And I was like, "Fuck you," you know. But he was. After that, I ended up making more money and having a great time. You know, moved to LA in '98 and started a career out here.
So when you were working in radio and you were starting to build up voiceover clients and stuff like that, what did that look like? Were you actively looking to do both radio and build up a voiceover?
I mean, I had an agent and I joined the union, so I didn't really have it. It looked much different than it is today, where people are branding themselves and doing stuff like that. I had an agent and I had a demo, and I was good. And I, you know, you had to be good at an audition. It didn't matter what, you know, your demo sounded like if you couldn't recreate that at audition. So I had an agent and I'd go into Kim Dawson and read my copy and, you know, book jobs.
Gotcha. So yeah. How did you go from taking improv classes to teaching improv?
25 years later. So, I mean, I was in an improv group and for a very long time, different formats, different groups. Did that for 20 years on stage. And I was, you know, I was known for improv in voiceover commercials and on-camera commercials. They know they could have me improvise. So I used to get work that way. And then I guess probably I started teaching kids with Gray Studios in 07, I think. But before that, I'd started working with Mary Lynn Wissner. She was the one that said, "You know, nobody coaches the conversational read, and you're good at that." And I was like, "Yes, absolutely." So that's when I became a voiceover coach. So, and that sort of morphed into, because improvisation stitches together nicely with the conversational read. So it was pretty much the conversational real read and improvisation for voiceover. And then lately, I'm in a really good spot with a couple of nice commercials running on camera. I don't really have to teach. So I'm just teaching kind of what I want to teach and who I want to teach. And that usually is improv, more character-driven improv, and how it applies to voiceover. But improv and voiceover compared to improv on stage is like this. Improv and voiceover is usually like that. So if you're good at this, you can certainly pare it down to this. So I teach this and then we apply it to that. Hey, there's your visual aid right there.
Yeah. And you said multiple formats. And I mean, I know improv to be improv, but like, what are the different improv formats?
Well, you know, you could do improv on stage with a group. Mm-hmm. You can improvise in a film, like Don't Look Up is large portion improvised. I improvise in almost every situation that I'm allowed to. On-camera commercials, on stage, voiceover, anywhere. So that, I mean, as far as platform, you can improvise in anything. You can, you know, you can dramatically improvise. It happens all the time. It's what Leonardo DiCaprio said, De Niro told him, learn the script backwards and forwards so you can leave the script, improvise, and come back, and you know exactly where you left off because you know the script so incredibly well, you can go off and improvise. So that would be, you know, just the basic places that you perform. Anywhere you perform, you can perform, you can do improv. Now, listen, if you're on Broadway, they want you to say those words, you know, and if they say stick to the script, absolutely, great. It's right there, no problem. You get the money, you win. So, you know, if they cut me loose, it's usually a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah.
But listen, I want to work. I'm not like, oh boy, I really have to improvise here.
Right.
I'm like, no, that's a great idea. These are great words. I'll say that. Right now you can get 5 of those at Olive Garden for just $8. Thank you. You know. Right.
Okay. So whenever you are, because improvisation, sometimes it comes naturally, but sometimes it is something that needs to be taken a long time to learn. When you're taking on new students, what are some of the biggest areas that you see that need improvement?
It's not really need improvement, but it's a mindset and lack of thinking. Don't think, you know, just be in a character. And if you are in a character, then you respond as that character rather than thinking, oh, here's a funny joke. So I come from radio. So it took me a very long time to not think, here's what I can say that's funny about that. Here's a joke. Here's something wordplay, rather than just responding in character, because that's what you're after in something like this, is you're after honest, grounded characters. Adam McKay, the phenomenal guy, started writing for Saturday Night Live and was an improviser before that. He directed Ricky Bobby. He was Will Ferrell's partner for a long time, and he directed Don't Look Up. And he said, you know, anytime I work with people that don't normally do improv, I always say, make it real and you should be fine. However outlandish the character, make it honest and make it real. And that's what was really nice about that. Sorry, hang on. What was really nice about that is that's the way I've always approached it. And that's the way I've always taught. Start from a place of grounded. It's much more, if you think of Arrested Development, Jason Bateman never tips his hand like he thinks something is funny or they're saying something funny. They never do that. All the stuff is delivered. The reason that makes it funny is the characters. You put the characters in situations where they have to deal with stuff, and how they deal with stuff, how they process that stuff, that's where the stuff is funny. So it's not, here's a joke, it's right. Here's how the character would respond. So that's really what I enjoy teaching. I really like giving people adjustments, like you need to say this like you're easily overwhelmed, right? And then see what they do with that character. And then you put that, you go, okay, I like that character. Now let's have that character do a job interview for a assistant manager of a floor at Macy's. And then you ask questions and they get to more defined, they get to highly define the character, and it just gets more and more entertaining. So I like to do stuff that makes me laugh, but it is hard. I'm kind of known for gently pushing people off the cliff out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. and catching them and saying, it's okay, you know, but the only place you can really learn stuff is out of your comfort zone.
Right.
I recently took a self-tape theatrical audition class from James Dumont, who's just a wonderful cat that I've seen at commercial and theatrical auditions for 20 years. He's always just an incredibly nice guy. The kind of guy that would give you like, oh, this casting, I don't do that many theatrical auditions. And he does. He's Dallas Buyers Club, Catch Me If You Can. He's the big guy, got shot in the gut on Righteous Gemstones right now. And he's just a wonderful character actor and made a great living at it. But I don't work in that world that often. So when I get up to bat to do that, I'm a little rusty, and you kind of got to hit the ground running and be a little more familiar with it. So I took a 3-hour Zoom class through Creative Acting Studios, and it was great. It was last Saturday. It takes a lot to keep me off the beach on a Saturday, but it was great. So I think I don't know if this has any relevance to anything that you ask, but nope. You got to keep training. You got to keep adapting or you become irrelevant. And that's, you know, I turn 60 next week, and I'd like to imagine I can remain relevant for another 30, 40 minutes.
Gotcha. So what do you do to get yourself out of your own comfort zone when you feel like you need a refresher or you feel like you need to improve?
Pretty much exactly what I just said, Andrew. I took a theatrical class and I don't do that. So gotcha. Yeah, I go to a coach and find somebody that teaches stuff that I'm not good at, that intimidates me. So that's exactly what I did. And that's exactly why I did it. It's like, okay, I want to do more television. I want to be on, have a shot at more theatrical stuff. So you go and you just jump off that cliff. I'm usually the way people do that is they're like, I'm frightened to death of improv. And I'm like, let's do it. I'll show you some real cool tricks and techniques that you can do so you're not afraid. And that it becomes something when you see, I always want people after they work with me for a while, when they see improvise, improvisers welcome, ad lib, make it your own. When they see that kind of stuff, that they go, all right, cool, I got this. This is my advantage. This, I can stand out like this, as opposed to, oh fuck, oh Jesus, there's no words. So, yeah.
So what are the answer? What was that? I'm sorry.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, it absolutely did. So what are some of the techniques that you allow people to take home? Because I know a lot of things have been remote lately. So what are some techniques that people can do?
What I was saying is try to be more present. Don't try and think ahead, or, you know, just once you decide to play the character, hold on to the character. Don't change the same thing I talked about in our class. Once you, in improvisation or a scene, any type of scene, if you start with a limp, unless Jesus heals you during that scene, you're going to end with a limp. So if your character is standoffish and, you know, upset, unless there's some transformation that follows along with the story, you're going to end that way. If your character is skeptical, they're going to stay skeptical. Otherwise, it becomes a tonal change. Like, well, that doesn't, when you watch a show and you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. You don't really know exactly why. It's usually a tonal change where they want to be really, really serious, but now they want to be funny.
Yeah.
If they weren't like that before, it's a big record drop. Like, whoa, wait a second. That didn't make any sense. So hold on to your character, make strong character choices. Listen. Listening is the most important thing to improv. You know, I teach every week multiple times for hours at a time. So it would be a lot to sort of lay out, but those are some things that I think are very, very important to good character work in a commercial. And the thing is, they're all characters, right? If I get specs that say aging hippie who likes bikinis, pot and surfing, great. But I haven't seen those specs yet. So pretty much everything you're going to read is a character. Maybe it's closer to who you are on, you know, right up closer to the middle, but it's all a character. So once you make that character choice, hang on to your character. What does your character want? Yeah, whatever. Basically, the more I teach improvisation for voiceover, the more I realize it's just a fucking acting class. It's just acting. So acting 101, make a strong character choice, keep it simple, hold on to your character.
Gotcha. Awesome. So going back to the voiceover side of things, since I know the industry overall has changed since you first got into voiceover versus now, drastically, but how has your individual schedule changed, or how has your mindset changed in how you approach looking for voiceover work?
I started with ICM out here in 98, and then that became DPN. 10 years later, they took the Rolodex and built their own agency, and I've been with them for 22 years. So that's how I look for voiceover. They look for it and take 10% if I book something. So my agent sends me scripts every week, and I work as hard as I can to book those. If it gets really slow and stuff isn't popping, I'll hit old, because I'm a union guy. I turn down a shit ton of work. Mm-hmm. I do, because I just believe in the union. I believe in a fair wage for everybody and healthcare and all that. And when we, you know, I see all these horror stories of people like, they haven't paid me, and what do I do? And, you know, the rates will continue to go down. For, you know what I mean? Even in non-union work, they use the union scale as a reference point. And I think that's great. And when, you know, I understand people can't just jump in on the union. It doesn't make any sense. It's a shit ton of cash. But it should be something that you're angling for, because you get healthcare and you get pension. I started taking my pension at 55. I'm very happy about that. And I'm very happy that I, you know, my agent and my unions have pulled in, you know, $50,000 for me when there was a battle with a client who didn't want to pay and the spot was running. I never have to be a part of that. I never have to worry about chasing down money or that. I will definitely, if it's because industrial work is a little less covered. There are ins and out. There are some union contracts that cover it, and there are others that there are, you know, gray areas and area that I could go, hey man, do you need a, you know, an in-house video or something, or, you know, but it's been a while since I tried to chase down that kind of work. I get enough. I'm fortunately currently on camera and teaching is plenty, and my pension. So I'm okay right now. Who knows what next year brings, but
yeah. Awesome. So what do you do outside of voiceover? Like, how do you clear your head outside of the booth?
I drink. I like to surf. I'm a writer. I'm a member of the Writers Guild. So I'm a writer. My daughter and I have written a animated pilot, and we're producing that. It's in the animatic stage now, and I have a phenomenal cast of people that she grew up with in the lobby, and Billy West and Maurice LaMarche and Lorraine Newman and Tara Strong and Dee Bradley Baker and Mindy Sterling. Did I say Mindy twice? I think I did. So a lot of time right now is getting people. We have a merch store, and we have shirts and stuff, and we're raising money to build the animatic. The animatic is currently, Miranda's working on it at Surfer Jack Studios, who did Phineas and Ferb and Pete the Cat. So Swampy Marsh is sort of our guiding light there. And probably late April or May, we'll have an animatic to take out and pitch to Amazon and Netflix and whoever will see us. So I spent a lot of time doing that. I like the beach. I have a nice house here, a small house by the beach here in Venice. And I have a garden. I have a cat. I'm an avid consumer of great TV. So I'm always watching the next show, and my daughter keeps me informed, like, what cool new thing I should be watching. So, you know, that kind of stuff. My mom lives in Sacramento, so I go up there. I would say the biggest hobby these days that I do more consistently is surf. So I live a mile from the beach, and surf, that's a place where I recharge my brain a lot. And I really like being in the water. So all right, you don't get to say awesome one more time.
All right.
Each time I finish a block, you go awesome. So that's it. You get four awesomes. You got to come up with something else.
Can do. I'll work on that.
Just for your transitions and your regular list.
No, I need that. And I've been getting a lot of feedback on that, on how I want to say it. It just, I don't know. It's instinct. You know,
it's okay. It's okay.
It's like when I was working in restaurants, it was heard. Like I say heard after everything. And
right. Copy that. Copy. Yeah.
Right.
With Jimmy Fallon, it was, so great. So great. So great. So great.
I forgot what my next question was, to be honest.
It was something about short-term memory and pot.
Yeah, that was it. How much pot do you smoke?
I don't smoke much pot. I don't smoke much pot. I mean, the pot is so strong. I tend to eat a small amount of edibles at small increments because I like that. I like creative. So I don't like the indica couch. It knocks me out. Mm-hmm. So I don't smoke. I really stopped smoking pretty much during the pandemic because I wanted my lungs to be strong, and I'm such a lightweight. It takes very little of today's pot to overdo it. Like, where's my jacket? Help me find my house. So I tend to go with a certain kind of gummies, and I have half of one of those, and it's a nice little cruise. Sweet. I know it was a hypothetical, but there's my answer. There you go.
So along your voiceover career, what are some of the biggest lessons that you've taken with you where you just carry that, where maybe you made a mistake at some point, or you just learned something that it just stuck with you throughout your career?
I would say my buddy Ed Yeager, very early on, I'd come off of a really, really difficult session where it was like, you know, 50 takes A, B, and C of It's the Big Dish of Catfish. And it was just really just, you know, I know it's third world problems, but it can be debilitating. The rejection, that is the thing, the amount of stuff you read and the amount of stuff you don't book and the near misses that, you know, giant TV show, giant campaign worth 50 grand that you miss out by a gnat's ass. He told me very early on, he said, if you get the money, you win. So I've always felt like if I'm having a tough session, I'll find a way to make it interesting for me or fun for me. I collect people being assholes. I collect phrases and things like that so I can put it into a character. When I do theatrical or on-camera stuff, very often I'm an overconfident ex-senator, ex-military, lawyer, you know, that kind of bombastic sort of prick. Because I make games of difficult situations. So I would say the thing I learned early on was make everybody at the session have the very best time that you can. It always gets me into the comfort zone to make other people laugh, which is why I miss the lobby at DPN so much. It's much more difficult to audition for me by myself here in my little booth here. I don't like it as much as having a director. At DPN, we had, you know, often we had three booths running with three great directors. And I much prefer that to self-direction and picking something apart that should have taken 6 minutes, right, and having it take 40 minutes. I prefer direction. I prefer the collaborative thing. And those directors, Dave and Juliet, were able to always get the very best out of me really quickly.
It's so much easier to play with a director.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm not a fan of the non-in-person audition. I really am not. I could do it and I'm good at it and I do okay, but I did much better in person. I like on-camera auditions in person as well. I like to go in and book the room, you know, have a good time, make people laugh. Or if they're all business, you just do it that way. But I prefer eye contact. I'm an extrovert. I like people. So pandemic has been a fucking drag. starting to come back though.
I'm right there in the middle because I do. I feel the exact same way. I like meeting the people I'm auditioning for. I like making them laugh. I like having that in-studio experience. But at the same time, the pandemic has opened up a lot more opportunities for remote work, and you're able to
book. Oh, without a doubt. More. Listen, I've been able to teach people all over the country, all over the world from this room. Mm-hmm. So that's been extremely handy. And I've adapted and developed material that works fantastic on Zoom. But I still think in-person is the gold standard. I really do. I'm headed to VO Atlanta for just that reason, because I wanted to coach in person again, and I want to get that going. So I'm throwing my hat in the ring to try and get people back in person again.
I look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So if you could write yourself a letter back to before you started in radio, just a letter to yourself to tell yourself anything, what would that letter say?
Make sure you can find your way home when you stay out too late. That's probably be it. Know where you're at. No, that's such a giant question. A letter. I don't know what I would say, because I think at the time, I just enjoyed the hell out of all of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I just enjoyed all of it. So the letter, you know, would ostensibly say, be sure and enjoy the ride. But I have. I've had a great fucking ride. VoiceOver has been fantastic to me. I've got to travel all over the world teaching it. I've got to, you know, provide for my daughter, and, you know, there's ups and downs. I guess enjoy the ride, I guess, but I really feel like I did. I guess what would I say to my younger stupid?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.